This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Joseph Ellis, whose new book is The Cause, The American Revolution and Its Discontents. Emphasis on the discontents, because everyone involved in the rebellion, so-called by the London side, the cause by the American side, has other opinions than what's happening in front of them. Washington's opinion is that this is a collective endeavor that needs discipline and a Congress that supports it. Congress has other ideas when it meets, and chiefly not to fund the army, but to count on the militia, what the professor calls the myth of the militia. It is now Valley Forge, a place I'm very familiar with, having been a Boy Scout on Valley Forge many times. I recommend everyone to visit to imagine how cold it was, 77, 78. Professor, I come to Valley Forge freshly because now I see that Congress did not share Washington's opinion. The British have camped at Philadelphia, don't bother to attack Washington. Washington's soldiers, what's left of the Continental Army, are without food, without blankets, without hope at all. Washington calls on Nathaniel Greene again. How does Greene help him?
Greene takes over the responsibility for Quartermaster Corps. There's nobody to do the job. He does it. And he manages to send foraging patrols out further, eventually to provide enough food. This comes by the time, not until April. About 1,200 American soldiers die of malnutrition or exposure during the winter of Valley Forge. So it really is a kind of, it's a time for what I call the few. These are the people who stay the course, who survive, who endure. Greene's performance is brilliant in recovering the food supply, but it's at a moment when you realize that this is the pattern now. The Congress is not going to provide the men or the money necessary to win the war outright. It's going to be a war of attrition. It's going to be a marathon. And the people who survive Valley Forge begin to think of themselves as a aristocracy, as a elite, not as a feudal or financially based, but an aristocracy of virtue, of commitment, of suffering together. And the half of the people elected as delegates to the Constitutional Convention a few years later will be veterans of Valley Forge. And they're the ones who begin to have at Valley Forge the view that the American war, what we call the revolution, must be a war for American nationhood, because without a federal government willing to provide support, we'll just splinter and almost die as we did at Valley Forge.
There are simultaneously what's going on here is that Benjamin Franklin is seeking the French to come in and help the Americans against the British, against the United Kingdom. Howe is punished for not having won the battle on Long Island and crushed Washington and withdrawn. A man named Clinton takes control in Philadelphia. At the same time, there's dissent at Valley Forge, and we need to make note of that. But first, the younger men, John Lawrence and Alexander Hamilton. We know Hamilton very well. Who is Lawrence?
John Lawrence is a South Carolinian. He's very young. He's only 20 years old. He's the son of the president of Congress, another Lawrence. He's well-educated. And he is the most fearless cavalry leader in the army, so fearless as no people want to serve under him because they're all going to get killed. And he is also, and this is really special, he believes that the American Revolution is and must become a war to end slavery. And this is a man from South Carolina who believes this. And so he is the purest now. He is the purest of the few. He gets wounded five times during the course of the war and eventually gets killed in a meaningless skirmish after the war is almost over. If Lawrence had lived, he would be the same stature, I think, as Hamilton, who happens to have been his best friend, too.
Benjamin Franklin is seeking the French. Is there an effort by the British to make peace? Once they withdraw, how? Do they then decide to fight to the end? Is Germain's anger dominating, or are there conversations?
There are conversations. They send something called the Carlisle Commission over to negotiate, because although Germain and George III are still committed to winning the war, they're under political pressure from the anti-war movement in London and in the House of Commons, and they are willing to make an effort at diplomacy. And essentially, the Carlisle Commission promises the colonists everything they had wanted before in 75. We'll let you have your legislatures, independent legislatures. We're not going to tax you. We welcome you into the British economy with our navigation acts. We'll even let you still have the Continental Congress. That offer would have been absolutely successful 3 years earlier or 4 years earlier. But now so many people have been killed. Too many women have been raped. Too many towns have been burned to the ground. It's no longer sufficient.
There's a revolt against George Washington, circling around a number of names, but Horatio Gates looks to be the most significant. What did he want?
Horatio Gates is the second or third in command in the army to Washington. He's an Englishman or maybe an Irishman, but he served in the British Army, so he's experienced in that regard. And he wins a battle at Saratoga. Actually, he has very little to do with it. He stays in the headquarters throughout the battle. But he becomes a figure that is talked about as a possible successor or replacement for Washington, because Washington hadn't won very many battles. And here, Gates has won a big battle, capturing Burgoyne's entire army, General Burgoyne's entire army at Saratoga. It's a whispering campaign. It doesn't lead to anything practical, but it shows that at the time, even Washington is under some level of criticism.
The British withdraw how? In a fete that you describe it with some joy, the celebration of Howe's leaving his troops in Philadelphia with all the young women turned out to admire a jousting contest, quite glorious. But at the same time, there's another event that happens out of Valley Forge when they learn that the French are coming in on their side. I believe that Washington has all the troops line up, and they celebrate. But who are those troops, Professor? We have a couple of minutes to describe them. The enlisted men, who are they? Where do they come from?
The enlisted men in the Continental Army are not yeoman farmers, or not what we now call middle-class Americans. They're what we call lower-class Americans. They're former indentured servants. They're carpenters. They're artisans. They're recently arrived immigrants from Ireland. They're not the lowest of the low, but they're hardly representative. They're the people who've got nothing else. This is for them a commitment that it doesn't vie with any other responsibilities. I think that for me, I finished the book thinking these are my heroes in some sense. The faceless soldiers who served before the duration and are not going to get much in the way of a pension for it, risk their lives in a war that's much more barbaric than we can possibly imagine. And I took a profile of Joseph Plum Martin, one of those ordinary soldiers, to try to recover that kind of experience. In some ways, we can never repay the debt we owe them.
They're immigrants. In other words, among them are people who've just come over to America. And this is what's striking.
And 8 to 10% at any given time are African Americans. It's the last time until the Korean War that the American Army is a genuinely integrated unit, because they're not in separate units. Although the Rhode Island regiment later is pretty much all black and it becomes the most elite combat unit in the Continental Army. But it's an integrated force. The African-Americans that retreat to the British Army are brought into the Army, but they're usually, with very few exceptions, not allowed to serve in combat units. They're support troops. They dig ditches. They pull cannon, that kind of thing. And there are roughly the same number of troops that served in African-Americans who served in the British Army, 8 to 10,000 has served in the American Army, maybe a little bit more on the American side.
Let's fight some more war, Professor Joseph Ellis, The Cause. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.